Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Unlimited Life. I am so excited for today's show and today's guest. Today we are talking about lighting and special effects magic. And I cannot imagine a better time of the year to talk about that at the holiday season, where we're all so excited and so entranced by the lights that we see around us. And it's that lighting, and it's really the special everything, the essence, the aura that brings that magic to life. And today we have the master of creating magic. Today we are speaking with Mark Rosenthal, and I am so honored because Mark is somebody I've known for years. I have tethered myself to his work because it's so phenomenal, and what he does is such a gift to theater, to stage performances everywhere, to film, to television, to video, to so many events that we're going to talk about that are part of your lives. And they're part of your lives, and the reason you're so drawn to them is really because of what Mark adds. Mark is an award-winning producer, a designer, and he has created events, art exhibits, and for theme parks, for theater, absolutely around the world. He owns a company called Personal Creations, which is a design and a production company. And we're going to talk with him about the steps to creating the keys, the tools, the secrets to really having that unlimited experience that we know to be theatrical magic. Mark, welcome to the show. It is such a joy to have you with us here today.
Hi, it's so great to be here. You know, I can't wait to meet this person you're talking about. I'm already enthralled.
Well, you know, I'm such a huge fan of your work, and I have been since the very first day I met you, and it's so rare. You know, I was sharing somebody last night, I was talking, I was so excited that you were coming on the show, and I was sharing with somebody, and I said, you are in a class by yourself. I can't even say your work is like XYZ, or you literally have created a world. It's, you're sort of like the Walt Disney of the special effects world. You have these visions, and you've made them come to life, and you can see the smallest thing and say, oh, I know how I'm going to use that. And so I'm so excited for this conversation today, and it's just so much fun having you here.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's I'm really grateful for, you know, what you're saying and your insights. And, you know, there are actually many, many people that work in this industry that have incredible talents, and so many that I look up to that I couldn't possibly imagine being able to create what they create. It's really a fascinating corner of the world to work in.
Wow, I love that. So one of my favorite questions to ask is always the, did you know? You know, the when you were 6 and 7 and 8 and when you were a little boy, did you know, you win for like the best science projects or the best Halloween costumes, or was this something you were always interested in?
You know, I was always fascinated with light. It really started in third or fourth grade when I played one of the pilgrims in the Thanksgiving Day show. And I remember walking in, we had in the elementary school I was in, we had a theater that was the gymnasium. So they had a little stage area at one end. And I remember being fascinated at just turning on the lights, turning on just simple switches. There were no dimmers, just turning on the lights. And something about that and seeing these colored lights up overhead just captivated me. And it started there. And I was very fortunate that my father was a very brilliant man. He was an engineer and a systems engineer, and also, as it turns out, a lighting designer for an early part of his career. So it was very natural for him to nurture that and for us to do science projects. And, you know, we would get these little kits from Radio Shack and get the soldering iron out and build stuff. And back when Radio Shack actually had stuff like that, and it was really cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's so much fun. It really is. And your sound is popping just a little, so I don't know if you're listening to us or, you know, if you can pull back from the mic just a bit, because I want to make sure that everybody hears every single word that you say, and that, because I know that you have so much to share. And I was looking at your bio, and It is so fast. I mean, it's amazing. I was looking at, you worked on the Super Bowl halftime show. You worked on Nickelodeon Tour and Rack of Power. And so let's talk first about the big, the broad, because it's one thing to say, okay, I was fascinated with lights, and it's another thing to do the Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah. I'm fortunate in that my life and career have gone in interesting situations. And I think a large part of that is I've just been open to new things. And there are any number of points in my career where someone says, hey, are you crazy enough to do X? Or would you? Or would you consider? And generally my first response is, of course. And then my second response is, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? But you know, so many different projects. There was a huge project in Houston at the turn of the century. It's funny to say that now, but from 1999 to 2000. And it was the first of the big millennium shows. And as far as we know, it was the largest sky show ever produced. And the city of Houston decided that they were going to turn the entire city into a stage. And there was the most amazing fireworks show and lighting. The entire Houston downtown area was literally closed off for one night because it was a fallout zone from the fireworks. And we spent weeks and weeks preparing and moving equipment all over the city. There were 24 straight hours of helicopter lifts to get equipment to tops of buildings. And I got this call, I think it was in July or August, from Rob, who was the head of LD Systems, still is the head of LD Systems. And his first words are, we're doing this thing, and are you crazy enough to do this? I thought, sure. And we wound up projecting on 27 different building areas as part of all of this and creating images that were up to 300 feet high. It was unbelievable. So that's often how these things happen. They just starts with a phone call. And that's how the Super Bowl happened. I had a friend who was a costume designer, and he knew that we did special lighting effects with electroluminescent wire. And he said, hey, we have this idea, and, you know, is this something that you guys can do? I know you do this. And that was something that literally came out of Burning Man. My ex, Marcy, was someone who specialized in this, and she was like the queen of EL from the early days of people doing this stuff at Burning Man. And I thought this was really incredible, and we worked on this project together, and she designed a very simple thing, and then I created a system for it. And that's how these things happen. It's really just being open to it and, you know, being open to possibility and not locking yourself into a corner. So there, when we were doing that, we were concerned about the brightness, and I thought, okay, I'm going to come up with a way to really supercharge the brightness, which basically meant building a power supply that overpowered the system. And these products are rated at, like, I don't know, 100,000 hours, maybe it's 10,000 hours, I don't remember, but a huge amount. And we did a test, and it looked fabulous. And basically, we had to make sure that this thing would last for 1 minute on air and several rehearsals. And when we did the test, and I mentioned this to the product manufacturer, they got all concerned that, oh, my God, you're going to cut the light down in half, and we have to let everybody know. And I thought, okay, so you're concerned that the life is going to get cut from 10,000 to 5,000 hours, and we have a one-minute effect. I think I'm good with that. So
it's incredible. So, and I want to.
Yeah, this is what happens,
yes,
with special.
Go ahead. These are
basically, you just decide. You make educated choices. You know, the key is to not put a silly in your choices. The key is to make educated choices based on science, based on experience, and based on your and other people's knowledge of how things work. And then you try. And
it's funny that you say that, because we haven't seen the stuntman on. And he was saying, you know, there are times that you can't test things. You have to have the knowledge. You have to say, I know this is going on. From my experience, from my vision, from, you know, that I know this is going to work. And I just wanted to ask you, because you used two words or two expressions, and we have, you know, others that are listening from Malta and South Africa and from France, and we have people all over the world listening to the show and learning today. And you were saying something about EL and Burning Man, and I know that there are people that feel, what's Burning Man? And go back there. So I just wanted to see if you could just shed a little light on what that meant that you were doing. Thank you.
So first, the EL. EL stands for electroluminescent, and it's a type of technology that was developed originally by the Air Force, I believe, for runway lighting. And a small voltage applied to a piece of this wire will make it glow. And, you know, it's you can get different colors in it, but it's a very simple technology. And Burning Man is an art and music festival that takes place out in the desert north of Reno annually at the end of August. And it started out as a get-together and a party, basically, by Larry Harvey on Baker Beach in San Francisco. And within a few years, it had grown to hundreds of people, and the cops said, listen, you know, you can't do this here anymore. It's just gotten too big. And they decided to move out into the desert. They found this place called Black Rock, and it's been growing and growing ever since. It's currently up to about 70,000 people a year. And for 1 week out in the desert, an entire city is created. And back in the late 90s, literally 1999, people started playing with costumes and this EL lighting. And there were several people that had found it and come up with it, and Marcy was one of them. And they started just designing and creating costumes using this technology. So they had all these things that lit up. Now you go out to Burning Man and everything is lit up, and LEDs are everywhere, and it's just this incredible, amazing light show. But that was its nascent beginnings.
Wow, that's so amazing. And to think that, you know, birth from that is such a creative process. And I love the fact when I was looking that it said that you work for the Nickelodeon tour Rocket Power. And so what was that like? Compared to something like the Super Bowl, what's it like to work for Nickelodeon?
Well, this was an interesting project because it was a theatrical project tour and bring these characters to life where kids and families, parents could actually interact in some way, get some experience. So it was basically a stunt show. And there was BMX bike riding and skateboarding, and the idea was to put together a team of incredibly talented kids that were based off of the characters, loosely based. You know, there was a skateboard character, there was a roller skating character, there was a BMX bike character. So we had those elements in the show. And they did some really awesome, amazing tricks. And it was all supported with a full concert lighting system. Brian Gale did the lighting design for it, and video. And my job was to create the video imagery, which was a combination of using some of their animated clips, but that was really a very, very small part of it. We created 95% of the imagery. We did some green screen. We actually created some fake commercials using the kids that were in the show, green screen and whatnot. And we put together a whole video thing that was based on tying these elements together to create an arena-sized show that went out on tour. And you know, it's funny what happens. The way this thing works is all the cues are tied to a timing track. And I believe for that show we use something called SMPTE, which is just a time code format. And basically there's a little black box that generates a stream of code that the lighting people and the video people and everyone can run off of, and it ties everything together. And we sat down for a rehearsal, and we were running a show, and all of a sudden the cues were wildly off, and we're looking at each other and said, "Oh my God, what's happened? Are we all going to get fired, or, you know, how can we possibly screw this up so bad?" And we checked with the audio people, and we said, "Okay, well, what version of the soundtrack are you running?" Because everybody was constantly making changes and updates. And we said, "Look, we're on date was. We have the soundtrack for this date." And they looked at us and they said, "What hour?" And we looked at them and you said, "What do you mean, what hour? You mean you've changed the soundtrack in the last hour?" And they said, "Yeah." That's how crazy it was, is that we literally had to make sure we had the soundtrack that was ever updated within the last hour or last 15 minutes, or it all didn't work. And then it was fine.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I've got so many things I want to ask you. One, though, is there are phrases and words on your website that I'd love to dive into. You talk about panoramic digital work. And just the idea of that, when I close my eyes, I love just thinking about that, panoramic digital work. And so can you describe that? Because I imagine that would be awesome.
It really is awesome. Panoramic, it is. It's incredible. Panoramic imagery as a specific technical concept in this context came out of the world of multi-image slideshows. And what happened is people understood that you could actually take a photograph and zoom into this photograph and create individual parts of this photograph that if you then created slides out of them and put them in slide projectors that were all lined up next to each other, you could get a giant panoramic image. So if you looked at most images these days are rectangular bordering on square, and then of course we have high definition, which is a little bit wider aspect ratio. HD has an aspect ratio of 1.78:1. So that's basically the width versus the height. So it's 1.78 times wider than it is higher. Well, when we would do multi-image panoramas, we would be 2:1, 3:1, even 5:1. So you're talking about imagery that was incredibly wide. And you would sit there, and there was a sense of really being involved in it, and immersed in it is the word. Kind of like Cinerama. Cinerama has a very wide aspect ratio, which is unfortunately one of the reasons why true cinerama is done very infrequently, and you have to have a special theater and projector systems to do it. But that's the basic concept of panorama. And then now with all the digital work, it's a similar concept where you use multiple projectors that are tied together with software so that the different projected images are overlapped and seamlessly blended together, and the experience of the viewer is just this ginormous, wide panoramic image.
Wow. That's just fascinating. I mean, absolutely fascinating. Every aspect of what you do. I mean, I also remember reading something about it, 3D computer pre-visualization for Universal Studios The Mummy, which won a CEO Award for Outstanding Achievement. Tell me about that.
That was a really interesting project. There was a particular point on the ride in The Mummy where the roller coaster comes to a junction, turns around, and goes up a hill, and the idea was that the mummy would suddenly appear as this gigantic face up above you, and you would be catapulted up into his mouth. And they were trying to solve a technical problem that had to do with how to create that image without any of the hardware being seen that was required to create that image. So what we did is a complete three-dimensional mock-up of portion of the ride and figured out where to place key pieces of hardware that couldn't be seen by the people riding the ride and would allow the effect to happen the way they wanted it to happen. So it was a combination of not just understanding how to do 3D modeling, but figuring out all the geometry to place pieces of equipment so that they were within the general tolerance of what that piece of equipment could do, even if it wasn't exactly the way it was intended to be used, and, you know, would be safe and would not be seen. And then we generated a full 3D rendering from the point of view of someone on the ride. And we played it back to them so they could see that if all this equipment was placed in these positions, someone on the ride would never see it. So that's
seamless.
And just to be clear,
it's project genius.
Thank you. Yeah, the project won the SIA award. And because I made this small contribution to the overall project, that's what enabled me to get the award as well, because I was part of that project and won the award.
That's brilliant. Congratulations. Wow.
Thank you.
That's just so much fun. Reading your bio is amazing. It really is. I mean, I could just sit here and just read it and read it and read it, and we could just, you know, spend the rest of the month until New Year's just reading. And such astonishing work. Coca-Cola? You worked for Coca-Cola for the Olympics?
Yeah. Salt Lake City. One of the things that I discovered was pin trading. I had no idea that pin trading is this gigantic hobby that people around the world are incredibly invested in. And the idea is that they go to Olympics religiously, and every Olympics has pins that are produced by various people. And these people from around the world are all about not just buying the pins, but trading them. And the way it works is certain pins are released on certain days. So you can get pins for athletes, you can get pins for the location, you can get pins for events, and people bring out their hats with all their pins on them they've collected over the years, and people who are really serious about this will notice that there are various pins that are really unusual, and there's this whole little community of pin traders. So we were hired to do all the visual and show control production for a live show that was happening in the pin trading booth that Coca-Cola was sponsoring. And it was all under the auspices of Coca-Cola. And there were actually two setups. And it was a lot of long nights in very cold weather Park City.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was a very interesting and challenging project.
That's incredible. And I have to ask, since it's Christmas season here, and we are just stepping our little toes into the holidays as we just wrapped up Thanksgiving, but one of my favorite parts of reading your bio was the many productions that you worked on of the Nutcracker. And I always associate the Nutcracker with Christmas magic. And so is there a way to make one of the most special pieces in history even more special? I mean, how does one work on the Nutcracker?
Well, generally one works on the Nutcracker by being involved with a ballet company that's producing it. And there are... This actually is a fascinating question, because one could always come up with more over-the-top ideas as to how to do something, you know, how to make the tree grow and the house grow and all the lights on it do something. And then wouldn't it be interesting if there was pixie dust in the air that swirled around and have a character. And, you know, you could go on and on and on with this. And at some point, one really has to take a look at, does this serve the production? Or are we just going down a rabbit hole because we're excited about what we could do technically? And this is where the artistic director of the ballet is a really important person, because that person holds space, holds the vision of what this particular production is. And in some cases, there is a call for doing things really over the top because they want to create a fantastical production that has all these effects in it. And in other cases, no, let's keep the effects toned down, because it really is about the dancing and telling the story with the performers. And this is always a very interesting balance to strike. And I've been involved with Nutcrackers that were very wonderfully gorgeous, gorgeous productions that didn't have a lot of special effects, but were incredible shows. And I've also been involved with some that had a number of special effects, and I was involved with one a number of years ago that didn't get produced, but it was with an artistic director that I'd worked with for a long time, and we decided that we were going to really try and create one of those totally over-the-top things, throw every imaginable special effect in it, and at the same time make sure that it held together as a production. So, but it wound up being so costly that it didn't see the light of day. But yeah, so that runs the gamut.
Because I love the Nutcracker, and there's something about lights. I mean, even the lighting of Christmas trees, the Rockefeller Center, the lighting at the White House, or even in your local area, whatever city or state or country people live in, the entire town gathers together, and it's a community event to watch the lighting of the tree or to watch something, you know, there's the shooting star, that special night where we have something going on. And there's a draw and a magic in watching stars twinkle or whatever it is, that light that we're so drawn to in someone's eyes. And so what do you think it is about the magic of lights?
That's an interesting question. It's kind of like watching fire in a way. You know, fire can be incredibly mesmerizing. And I think any kind of light, look, we could look at how we're hardwired from an evolutionary standpoint, that when we see light in the darkness, it's a beacon. You know, we get to shed light on things in our personal lives, and from a transformational perspective, we are drawn to light. Physically, when it's dark all around us, and there's always a sense of relief. So I think somewhere deep in there, there's an inherent fascination in being compelled towards light in some way. And at the same time, if it's not done well, or if it's used in a bad manner, it can be really, really problematic. Like if someone shines a really bright light in your eyes, that's certainly not compelling. And, you know, if you're at a rock show and the lights are just going crazy, at some point that can be a turnoff. You say, you know what, I've had enough of this. Stop moving the lights, or stop blinking them, or stop blinding me with them. So it's important to both appreciate how compelling light can be and have a context for it so that it winds up not being a really bad or painful experience.
I love that. What a great answer. That was just a brilliant answer. And I guess my next question has to do with traveling light. Because as you talk about the Nutcracker and we talk about the Olympics, or we talk about the Super Bowl, there are these amazing events. And then I know that I was also reading that you were involved in something in Tom Sewell's new digital multimedia traveling art show. And I love the concept of a traveling art show. And so what is it like to set up lights that then are going to be moved to another city, state, or country with the project or with the production?
It's all about making sure that you create an environment that supports your creative vision. So there's a lot of logistical work. What happens when you go out on tour, whether it's a rock show or a traveling art show or anything that's going to move, is you add on to whatever your design criteria are, you add on to the fact that you have to transport this, set it up, run a show, pack it up, and then transport it again. So you're constantly being mindful about how something is going to be set up. And the overarching phrase that we all use in the touring industry is you always rig for the out, which means you always design something and set something up based on how you're going to take it down. Because you can put something together pretty much any way you can. You can use tape, you can use wire, you can have all kinds of nuts and bolts, you can make something really secure. There are lots of ways when you're building something to really make sure that it's going to work and not fall down. But when you have to take it apart, then you realize, wait a minute, I way overbuilt this. I didn't need those 10 bolts. I didn't need those 20 pieces of wood. I needed really 5 pieces of wood or 3 bolts or whatever it is. So you really pay attention to what it's going to take it down and pack it away for the next thing. And once you do that, you can begin to whittle things away. You may look at effects that you really liked, but for what it would take to create that effect, it's just not worth the extra manpower or money or gear or time to set it up. Almost always there are time constraints, no matter how big a show is. Whether you've got a couple of hours, a couple of days, or a couple of weeks, there are always time constraints. So you have to be very mindful and careful about how much you're putting into something to make sure it can be set up and taken down within the time allotted by the production and, you know, the man hours, labor, all of that.
Wow, what a great answer. And so when you have a concert, and I know that you've worked, you know, from major celebrities and jazz concerts. And so do people come to you with the concert set and say, these are our numbers, this is the production, this is, and can you create an amazing light show or backdrop? Or do they come to you and say, can you create, and does the show work around what you're creating and the song sets and vice versa?
It happens in all different ways. Most often, my experience has been that people want to know what it's going to cost to do something. Say, okay, we want to do this video projection, or we want to do this imagery, and we want to hire you, and what's it going to cost? And, you know, there's no simple answer to that. And I use the analogy of, let's say that you come to me and say, Mark, I want you to produce a 30-second car commercial. How much is it going to cost? And I say, well, I can take my iPhone and go out to your car and walk around it and email you the file, and I'll charge you $20, and you will have a 30-second commercial of your car. Truth, right? Or we could fly a cast of 100 to some island and have a car there and have a crew of 50, and we can do all kinds of special effects on the car and in the background, and we can have dancers and fireworks, and that'll cost you $5 million. So, and then we could do anything in between. So I generally turn it back and I say, what's your budget? In other words, what's the value of creating something wonderful to you? And then that really forces the people involved to get a sense of what percentage of their budget they want to focus on a visual element, because any producer putting together a project knows that they have to hire a performer, you know, they have to hire the talent, they have to pay for the venue, they have to pay for labor to move it in, move it out. You know, there are all these things that no matter how big or small the production is, there are departments that have to happen. There's lighting, there's audio, there's all of that. So within the context of this whole number, they will have some dart on the wall idea. And I generally say, look, give me a dart on the wall number within 30 or 40%. You know, let's say we'll have a wide range. And then let me come back to you and say, this is what we can do for that number. And I find that that's a great way to start the conversation. Because if you have a budget in your mind of, let's say, $10,000 to do something, and you say, wow, can you do this for me, and what's it going to cost? And I get an incredible idea, and I say, wow, we could do this, this, and this, and it'll only be $50,000. And you're going to look at me and say, well, I can't afford that. And that's because we didn't have a meeting, a general meeting of the minds beforehand. If you came to me and said, look, I've got somewhere between $5,000 and $15,000 to do something, what can we do for that? Then I know that there's a general context, and it's not going to be a $100,000 show or a $2 million show. It's going to be around a $10,000 show. And then we can work towards something that's going to wind up in that general vicinity. So that's how I like to approach it.
Just fantastic. And I love that concept and just the meeting of the minds and being able to be on the same page and the same creative vision. I think, and that's when I look at your work, what's so astounding, because there's such a synergy between you and the clients and everything I've seen. And it's so much fun just looking at everything that you've done. I mean, the world's largest sky show with Josh Groban and Sting and Graham Nash and Barbara Streisand and Steve Winwood and Traffic, and just what a magic carpet ride life you've been on. This is just, must be so much fun for you.
It is. It's, you know, there are moments that are particularly gratifying that might not be meaningful to other people. I'm sure we all have those in our lives. There was one point many, many years ago where LA Opera was embarking on a very ambitious new production of Magic Flute. And Gerald Scarfe, who did all the imagery for Pink Floyd, was doing the set and costume design. And they had this concept of doing projection. And so Gerald was creating all these amazing images, brilliant, brilliant artist. And they went to a projection vendor who was the largest projection vendor in the area at the time. And they said, listen, we want to do this, and, you know, we have this idea. What do you think? And they took one look at it, and they said, we can't do this. Call Mark. And they called me, and we wound up doing this amazingly involved, complex show that had projection everywhere. This was at a time when if you were doing shows with very large projectors, they're called Pani projectors that came out of Germany. And they're used to create these gigantic images on backgrounds for operas. They specifically were developed for use for operas. And if you had two or three or even four of these giant projectors in a show, it was a lot. When we opened Magic Flute, we had 21 projectors. And front, back, top, rear, sides, everywhere. So those moments, you know, when someone reaches out and said, hey, no one seems willing or able to do this, and we were referred to you, what do you think? And I can look at that and say, yeah, you know, I can dive into that. That seems fun and interesting and would give me a chance to play and try some things and push my boundaries a little bit, you know, push my comfort zone a little bit. Hopefully not a lot, but sometimes it is a lot.
I love it. How much fun. And you have pushed your boundaries in a lot of ways, because I know you've also directed and produced. I believe you did War Pigs video for Ozzy Osbourne for the No More Tours, and you even produced a short film, Goalie the Game, which won a Houston Film Festival Gold Award. And so where was the dive that you said, okay, now I'm going to direct and produce? Because that's really expounding those boundaries.
You know, I have a classical theater training, which means, even though my emphasis was on lighting design, a classical theater training means you've been trained in all aspects of theater, acting, directing, writing, all of it. And I did a bunch of acting up until college. And then, you know, I wanted to focus on the lighting. So I had some basic concept of directing. And the way the War Pigs thing happened really just came out of my experience doing multimedia production. This just happened to be a video. And as it turned out, it was all footage based on war. So it was a lot of stock footage that I put together. And they came to me and they said, hey, you know, would you be interested in doing this? It wasn't a big budget. And I said, sure, but what are the, you know, what does Ozzy want to say or what's the thing? And he said, you know, Ozzy just really wants to make a statement on war. It's bad and all of that. And that's pretty much it. And you're free to do whatever you want. I thought, okay. So this really turned into my statement on war in a way. And I chose to focus on the Vietnam War. And I made this whole arc to the War Pigs the War Pigs soundtrack that started out showing American young men as these invincible guys. And there were some really horrific images in there juxtaposed with gorgeous, gorgeous imagery. I found this imagery of a plane flying through napalm bombing runs, where you see this gorgeous, lush green landscape, and then in slow motion, you see these incredibly beautiful orange blasts coming up, and it's flying through the fog. And this juxtaposition of really gorgeous imagery, it almost looked like swimming through coral blooms in the ocean. And this juxtaposition of this gorgeous imagery with the horrific understanding of what was causing it was really profound for me. And I played with, there were images of carpet bombing, and I played with getting the bombs to go off at exactly in time with the music. And my general concept was to lead people into this feeling all great and excited and like, yeah, you know, we've got these people laughing and smiling and doing these incredible things. There was a picture of a helicopter doing an inverted loop. You know, we're all powerful. And then through the course of the song, as the words, you know, begin to really question what's going on, the imagery shifts. And it's a subtle shift where we started looking at these kinds of pretty images in a horrific context, and then the images shifted again into straightforward horrific imagery of war. Like, this is really what's going on, and people dying and getting hurt and all of that, and realizing that we are not that powerful. We are just people, and we get hurt and die and all of that. And then it shifted into Vietnam War Memorial and the realization of the really deep horror that all of this got created, and then ended with some imagery of homeless vets that when they came back, this is how we as a nation have dealt with these people or haven't. And this is, you know, there are all these issues that they have. These people that started out as these really young, vibrant, healthy, powerful people were destroyed. And that was the arc of the piece. And I felt it was a really strong statement. And, you know, this is some interesting feedback. To this day, when I look at it every once in a while, I think, wow, this is a really strong statement. I'm very proud of the work. And at the same time, when it was played to a stadium full of heavy metal headbangers, what I heard was everybody was silent. It just stopped. And I thought, wow, that's incredible. What a profound statement. Ozzy's got to be really happy to have that many people just suddenly stop dead and really get it. And then I realized, no, not so much, because when you're in the middle of a concert, that isn't necessarily the right thing that you want to have happen. doesn't detract from the quality of the statement. It just might not be the right moment to make that statement with that audience. So they wound up toning it down over the course of the tour by intercutting it with live shots of the band. But that was a very interesting experience to learn all of that and to really become aware of how something is used in the context, and that maybe some more interaction with the artist or something could have helped in some way.
Just brilliant. I mean, the fact that you put your heart and your soul and everything into your visions, and that you just said, okay, no problem, I'll do this, a war piece. I mean, what a huge chunk to take on a statement on the war and to have a single thought, like, war is bad. Let's make a video. And to create such a masterpiece and such a moving piece and something that touched people so deeply that they did hit pause on their life, even in the middle of a concert, is just such a statement to you and your talent.
So. Yeah, thank you. I feel it was a good and important thing to do. I'm just not certain that I'm not certain about the end result, just in terms of how it played in a concert and all of that. But I basically was following what they had asked for. They said, okay, you want a statement on war? I'll give you a statement on war. Here we go. Like, there was no, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, I was like, make a statement on war. Like, okay, let's go.
I love that.
Took him at his word.
Absolutely. And then for, you know, another winner, you produced the short film Goalie, right? The Game Continues, which won the Houston Film Festival Gold Award, was a Gold Award winner. And so what made you say, yes, I want to produce this particular project of all the projects that I can put my hand into, that this is the pot I want to stir?
I had been working with a good friend of mine, Brian Stoller, who has now directed a number of films. And at that point, he was doing shorts for Foul Ups, Bleeps and Blunders, and there were another couple of shows, and we would have these very tiny budgets and a small crew, and he would come up with these ideas that were spoofs on all kinds of different things. And I had been working with him as a production manager, basically. And then someone came to him who wanted to do, with Hamilton Mitchell, who was the star of this little short, who had wanted to do a piece, and Brian came up with this really funny and clever idea, and the idea was a spoof on the goalie from Friday the 13th, and, you know, you're at summer camp, and kids are playing hockey, and they're going in on goal, and they're getting hacked to death, and they're turning to the coach and saying, "Coach, he's not playing fair," you know, and it was done in a very funny, humorous way. There was no gore or anything. It was just really funny, and then Hamilton comes in and saves the day, basically. And because Brian and I had worked on various things, I said, well, you know, I can produce this. Because I had been producing other small projects, and it really wasn't a whole lot different than producing any of the other multimedia projects, the slideshows and things like that, that involved setting up shots and dealing with people and locations and crew and equipment and all of that. At some point, it's all pretty much the same producing. There are certain areas that, of course, are very different, but if you look at it as a system, the system is pretty much the same. So I just applied those systemic tools to the video side of things, or the film. In this case, it was film. And that was really exciting. You know, we had a 35-piece orchestra, so I had never dealt with that before. That was fun and interesting, and basically the composer really organized that. But we had a full orchestra, and as I said, it was done on film, which was fun because we really hadn't saved most of the other stuff we had done with video or some 16mm. And when I was in school, I had actually taken some film classes, so I had some exposure to that. So all of that, for me, I felt, you know, I've got enough of the underpinnings that this wasn't that much of a stretch. and it seemed like it'd be a fun project. We got to spend two nights on the ice at the Culver City Ice Rink after the Kings finished their rehearsal. And that seemed like a fun way to spend a couple of nights. A little cold.
That sounds like a wonderful way to spend a couple of nights. Are you kidding? There's so many people here that are just jumping through the phone all jealous, and they're like, I want to do that. That just sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun doing projects with Brian, and he's a really funny, wonderful soul and comes up with all kinds of hilarious things. So we basically had a lot of fun, and it was very funny in the process of making sure we did what we needed to do to make the show happen.
I love this. This is just amazing. I mean, and your incredible experience, and I'm so pleased when I'm looking at your bio and looking at some of the websites and looking at, first, your website's amazing, but I mean that you were awarded the Lighting Dimension International Projection Designer of the Year Award, that you have been a writer in all of these magazines, that you've instructed classes. I mean, you truly, it's one thing to have a gift and talent, and it's another to be recognized for it, and then to share it and to teach it to others. And the fact that you have moved into that arena of sharing your talent with those that are looking to get into this business and looking to step into this magical world is really a wonderful forum and space to be in.
Yeah, it is. It's great to share that excitement with people, to pass it on, and to nurture them. And it's always so amazing at what other people can do. And you look at them like, you know, people that you've taught or shared things with, and all of a sudden they're doing things that are just way past your ability. And it's so amazing. And it's humbling. It's humbling. And it's fascinating as a life journey to think, or to contemplate, how do we keep grounded and how do we hold what are our talents and recognize our talents, even though people that we have mentored, tutored, whatever, are showing skills far beyond us in different areas. That's an interesting contemplation. And to, for me, I find it really helps support the idea that, yes, we all have talents, and I get to honor my own talents as I get to honor yours and everyone else's.
Just brilliant. And how do people find you? If somebody wants to, do you work? I know you work with people all over the world. Do you work on Skype, or do people call you for a consultation, or what's the best way for somebody to hire you and to work with you?
All of the above. Phone, Skype, website, email. You know, it depends on the project. I've done a number of projects in China, and, you know, I travel all over the world, obviously. So wherever the project is, we just figure out what that project needs and what resources they have to bring to bear to make that project happen. And we see if there's a fit. And if there's a fit, great. And if there's not a fit, then we may explore how I could support them in a more limited role if they don't have finances or something. But I'm very open to that. I love being involved in projects just in general. Like, it's always so fascinating, whatever the different projects are. People, it's amazing what people come up with. And it's fun to be in support of other people's visions and, you know, to also do mine. So, yeah, I love it when people just call or email or find me on the web and say, hey, you know, we're doing this. Would you be interested? Absolutely.
That's great. So what is your website? Where should people go?
It's personalcreations.net. And the .net is very important because there is another company called Personal Creations that makes a wonderful little tchotchke gifts. But they are .com. So if you're trying to get me, I'm at .net.
That's really funny. I'm Artistry in Motion Incorporated, you know, and Artistry in Motion itself was a confetti company.
Right. Yes.
So it's the same thing.
I know the owner of that company. I know,
it's a wonderful
funny.
Confetti company, but it's just not
yeah.
me. So I,
right.
you know, I absolutely love that. And then advice for young people, you know, or people of any age that are interested in getting into this field. Where would you start? Where do you begin?
Get involved in any project that excites you. Ask to be an intern. Ask to just observe, to be an observer.
Wow. I love the fact that he was just saying to get involved, to absolutely step in, jump in, be part of it, ask to be an observer in something, because I think that really is the most magical way possible when we look at somebody and we idolize them or we see something sparkle and something shine and we want to know how that works. That's a curiosity that we all have when we're children. And just the idea of being able to be part of that curiosity wheel and stepping into that. Mark, I was just saying that I think that that's such a great answer to say to intern and to get involved, because to be able to idolize someone, or when you see something as a child and you always want to know, how does that work? How does that, and so by observing, it's such a beautiful way to step into the pool.
There's another important aspect of that, which is my experience in general is that people doing this work really do love to share it on some level. And that may not be obvious. They may say, no, don't bother me, I'm really busy or whatever. But if you're if you're truly coming from a place of wanting to learn, to get involved, and being appreciative of whatever it is that someone might share with you, then that comes across. And it oftentimes isn't easy. And a lot of times people won't want you to be around, because it's just too disturbing, or distracting is a better word. But perseverance, if you are committed to being involved in any aspect of the production or performance industry, you might as well learn perseverance right off the bat, because if that is a problem, then it's not a career for you. So that would be my best advice. Like, no matter what anybody says, just keep doing it and just keep finding ways. Keep saying, okay, I've been told 25 different times by 25 different people, you know what? I've got to go talk to the 26th. And that's the way it happens with writing, with whatever. And yeah, there are those times when sometimes it just happens. But in general, the people that make careers in this business are people who are survivors and have just decided that they're going to persevere no matter what. And if one door closes, they go in a different direction to open up another door.
Just all of this is such incredible advice and such beautiful information. And as we're stepping into the new year, I know you were working on several projects right now. Anything that you want to share that you have coming up that people should be watching for?
Yes, I'm very, very excited about a show that's opening up in Hollywood at the Montalban Theater on Vine. It's opening up December 12th, and it's called Ratatatical, A Journey in Rhythm. And it's by Broncar Lee, and it's all about different – there's rhythm in everything. And it's basically Broncar's journey. It's written by Amina Kaplan and Broncar and directed by Amina, and it features some really wonderful people, some incredibly talented musicians and dancers, and it's just a fun show. It's like a rhythmic version of Stomp, and it's just finding all the wonderful things you can do with your body as an instrument. Fun, fun show. So please come see it. It's both weekends. It's the weekend of December 12th and the following weekend as well. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday afternoon.
Okay. Well, I know I would love to see this show. And anybody that's in Hollywood or visiting Hollywood, absolutely a show to find, Ratatatical. And, Mark, it has been such a joy having you on the show today. And I just so admire your work. I'm such a huge fan. And thank you for all the magic and the illumination and really beyond special effects, but the special that you put into all of your projects with so much vision and care and commitment and talent and love. And certainly we look forward to continuing watching in all realms of entertainment your incredible, incredible talent.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's just a lot of fun. And, you know, I just feel like it's like, oh, that looks like fun. Let's do that.
Well, it was fun having you on. And we look forward to having you back and wish you a happy holiday season.
Thank you.
So
it's such
much
a pleasure, Nicole. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for being with us today. Wow, what a wonderful guest. See, that's special in special effects. Imagine working for the Super Bowl and Coca-Cola and all of these celebrities and the Disney rides and, I mean, just the ballets and the art and the film and the television and being able to create somebody's vision and dream. To say, what did you have in mind? What are you looking for? And to be able to take that and even be able to pause somebody in their life, move somebody in such a profound way, or allow people to step into the world of awe and fascination. And I love his advice to intern to be able to learn from people that are doing this, to step into that world and have people share their gifts and their magic and talent and look at all the magazines that he's been writing for, all of the articles that he's written, all of the places that he's taught, all of the awards. You should go to his websites that he's won. I mean, truly, he is the top of the field in the lighting and special effects design. And so what a privilege to have him with us today as we bring you the very best tools and secrets and keys and techniques to creating that unlimited life. And this is really unlimited fairy tale, unlimited fantasy, and truly unlimited entertainment. So this is Nicole Brandon and Mark Rosenthal wishing you an incredible week and a wonderful unlimited life.